Hi guys, just to let you know, I have a promo of another podcast that I would love for you to listen to playing at the end of this episode, so please stay tuned until then.
Andrew Gosden is an intelligent 14-year-old and he disappeared 2 weeks ago. He hasn't been seen since. Every day his mother is out searching for him, putting up posters and hoping for sightings.
It really has been quite devastating because it's such a shock and we just haven't got a blueprint for how to handle this kind of situation really. Sometimes putting in 15-hour days, just walking, chatting to general public, staff in the museums or any places where I know he's likely to have been that he enjoys coming to.
You kind of feel like, well, I've lost almost everything, and every single day feels like a battle. It is a daily struggle for me every morning just to feel like I want to be alive.
Hi M&Ms, welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. In police's authorised professional practice, the term missing is defined as, quote, anyone whose whereabouts cannot be established will be considered as missing until located and their well-being or otherwise confirmed, end quote. In the UK, one person is reported as a missing person every 90 seconds. That's 180,000 people reported missing every year. It is more likely that a child will be reported missing than an adult, with 1 in 200 children going missing each year, compared to 1 in 500 adults. Research conducted over previous years has demonstrated that conflict, abuse, and neglect in the home, sexual exploitation, and mental health issues are among the top reasons children go missing. When children contact Childline, the common issues they raise include problems at home, abuse, sexual exploitation, domestic violence, and mental health issues. Despite these statistics, consequences of underreporting make it highly possible that these figures are inaccurate, and in fact, the number of people that go missing each year may well be higher. The charity Missing People suggests that as many as 7 in 10 children that go missing aren't reported as a missing person, begging the question as to the real number of people that go missing each year. Andrew Gosden was born on the 10th of July 1993 to adoring parents Glenys and Kevin Gosden in Doncaster, South Yorkshire. Andrew was the youngest of two, with an older sister Charlotte who was 2 years old at the time of his birth. Glenys and Kevin, who were both speech and language therapists by trade, were overjoyed when they learned that Andrew was a boy, with one of both genders being considered the perfect family unit. By all accounts, Andrew was considered an easy baby, sleeping 8 hours at night from the age of just 2 weeks old, a feat I'm sure most parents yearn for their children to achieve. Andrew was also a contented baby, and this demeanour didn't seem to falter as he grew up, very rarely becoming distressed or enraged. From about a year old, Andrew's parents became savvy to his intelligence. Quote, we had a foam alphabet that you stuck to the side of the bathtub. I remember Glenys telling me he could recognise about half the alphabet and pick them up without clues, and I told her that was ridiculous, he wasn't old enough. So I watched him do this in his bath time and really could hardly believe my eyes. End quote. Furthermore, despite incredibly poor eyesight requiring +8 diopter prescriptions, Andrew was able to read fairly fluently by the age of 3 years old. Quote, I recall taking him into the optician's to collect his first pair of glasses. I took a reading book so he could immediately see the benefits. Of course, the dispenser took the glasses off to adjust them, and he looked as though he might burst into tears having had this sudden realisation that he could read easily. End quote. Andrew had a 100% attendance at his Catholic high school, where he was a member of the Young, Gifted and Talented programme, a programme designed to enhance the educational development of the top 5% of school pupils. Andrew, who was described by his father as a genius, possessed a natural talent when it came to mathematics and seemed destined to attend Cambridge when he finished school. Kevin recalls a family holiday to Cyprus when Andrew was 10. Quote, "We were together and I said I needed to change some sterling at the bank before we went on with the day. He asked me in the bank how much I was changing. I told him £200, and 30 seconds later, he told me, to three decimal places, how much currency I should receive having looked at the exchange rate and deducted the percentage commission in his head. Now I can do that with paper and pen, but not in my head. I think I looked at him and just said, 'You're weird,' and he laughed. He was correct." End quote. Kevin also told me that he was in awe of Andrew's natural intelligence and recalls that he was on the school's math team. One year, the team attended a regional final and they lost by 1 point, simply due to Andrew being younger than other team members and getting shouted down when he attempted to give an answer. If they had listened to him, however, they would have won that final. Andrew had numerous interests throughout his childhood and early teenage years. He loved all the usual children's books such as Harry Potter, as well as Of Mice and Men, and really anything that had a, quote, pacey and absorbing plot, end quote. Every Friday evening, the family would have a movie night, whereby Andrew loved watching Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, just to name a few. Kevin recalls Andrew's passion for his favourite film director, Luc Besson, and recollects that Andrew wrote a movie review for school on one of Besson's early black-and-white post-apocalyptic films that Andrew seemed to understand better than Kevin could. With regards to music, Andrew shared a similar taste to his father and older sister, loving bands such as Muse, U2 and Linkin Park, as well as metal bands such as Slipknot. As with most teenagers, Andrew loved playing on his Xbox, where you typically find him playing sport-related games, such as games that involved football or tennis. Andrew had a passion for snooker too, possessing a half-sized table in his bedroom that he would frequently play on. Kevin recalls Andrew's love for cheese, pasta, and pizza, and recalls a holiday to Tunisia, where there was a pasta chef in the dining room, and by all accounts, Andrew was in his element. Andrew had a sparkling personality. He had ounces of confidence and was never afraid to try something new, wanting to go on all the big rides at a theme park Kevin took him to for his 8th birthday, and loving riding on speedboats on a holiday in Malta. Kevin describes his son as more of a listener than a talker, but also expresses that this was probably because he lived with two speech and language therapists and also had an older sister. Despite this quiet nature, Andrew would always express his opinion, and if he had a passion about something, he would discuss it at length. Andrew's intelligence came in part due to his ability to absorb information and facts like a sponge, and from a young age he possessed the ability to view things from different perspectives and form his own opinions on matters, especially political matters. Kevin describes his son as being extremely witty, and he managed to make people laugh, especially with his Catherine Tate, Monty Python and Blackadder impersonations. Kevin describes Andrew as fiercely independent, determined, polite and thoughtful, and his intelligence made it extremely easy for him to get on with adults. Kevin recalls that Andrew was a philosophical and deep thinker, and when Kevin and Glennis allowed the children to donate £5 each to a charity 1 month, Andrew chose WaterAid. Kevin, Glennis, Charlotte and Andrew were an extremely close-knit family, and Kevin's favourite memories of Andrew are just spending time with him. As the children grew up, Both Kevin and Glenys would each take a child somewhere where they could just spend quality time together, one-on-one. Quote, I still have scrapbooks he made when he was small of one or two of our dad and lad weeks in London. I remember he and I did a weekend of waterfall walks one year. He was about 12, I think. The weather was absolutely atrocious. We were soaked to the skin in about 10 minutes in the Yorkshire Dales, but decided we may as well carry on. And we're glad we did, because the waterfalls were awesome with the swollen rivers. I liked the fact that I could have days with him that were more like being adult friends than father and son, like going to a gig or something. End quote. All in all, Andrew sounds like an amazing, funny, bright, thoughtful, passionate and kind child, and I think this is significant testimony to Kevin and Glenys and how they raised him. Despite being the wettest summer on record, the summer of 2007 was an ordinary one. Andrew's parents suggested he go and spend some time with his grandmother in London, however he declined to go. This didn't strike Kevin or Glenys as odd behaviour, as he was busy with a summer school for gifted and talented children for 4 out of the 6 weeks of the school holiday, and he wished to just spend the other 2 weeks relaxing before he went back to school in September. Despite seeming a bit quiet, which his parents just put down to usual teenage behaviour, Andrew wasn't behaving out of character in any way, and there were no warning signs to suggest that anything was awry. As far as Kevin and Glenys could tell, Andrew wasn't experiencing any sort of mental health crisis, and there were no indications that he was being bullied at school. On the 13th of September, a week into the new school year, the Gosden family sat down to eat dinner together as a family, just as they did every evening. When they were finished eating, the family cleaned the kitchen and washed the dishes together before Kevin and Andrew completed a few jigsaw puzzles on the computer. Andrew then watched some comedy shows on BBC Two before heading to bed at about 10 p.m. The following morning, Andrew struggled to wake up and overslept after missing his alarm. Despite rushing around trying to get ready, Andrew was still together in time to catch the bus to school at the usual time. The last time Kevin ever saw his son was when he left the house in his school uniform and the pair said "see you later" to each other. Heartbreakingly, unbeknownst to the Gosden family, they wouldn't see their beloved brother and son later, and this was just the beginning of a nightmare that has never ceased. Whilst Kevin and Glenys believed Andrew was on his way to school when he left the house at 8:05 a.m, they were unaware that he was actually waiting in a local park until he knew everyone else had left for the day. When Andrew was confident the house had been vacated, he returned home, where he changed out of his uniform, putting it in the wash basket, and changed into a black slip-knot t-shirt and black jeans. With him, he took his bag, his wallet, keys, and PlayStation. He left behind the charger for his PlayStation, his passport, and it didn't appear that he'd taken a coat in case the temperature dipped. To me, this suggests that Andrew wasn't planning on being away from home for a considerable amount of time. But then again, it's impossible to know what he was thinking when he walked out of the house that morning. A neighbour's CCTV camera displayed him walking away from their family home at 9:05 a.m. He appeared to be in a rush, however, Kevin has since described Andrew as typically walking at a fast pace. When he departed his house for the second time, he virtually emptied his bank account, removing £200 of the £214 he had in there, and made his way to Doncaster train station, where he bought a one-way ticket to London King's Cross. Andrew boarded the train at 9:35 a.m, where witnesses described him as being quiet and engrossed in playing a game on his PlayStation. CCTV then captures Andrew departing the train at 11:20 at King's Cross station, and he's observed calmly walking out of the station. He doesn't appear to be in distress or coerced in any way. That CCTV image is the last ever sighting of Andrew Gosden. A misdialed mobile number saw a delay in Andrew being reported missing. When he failed to show up to his scheduled classes, teachers at the school left a voicemail on what they believed to be one of his parents' mobiles. However, they'd misread the register in front of them and instead left a message for the parents of a pupil above or below Andrew's name. Consequently, this left 7 hours and 40 minutes between when Andrew was last seen on CCTV at King's Cross and when he was reported missing. When Kevin, Glenys and Charlotte sat down for dinner that evening, they had no idea that anything was amiss. As far as they knew, Andrew had attended school that day and had returned home, and they assumed he was either in the cellar playing on his Xbox or in his room doing his homework. When they discovered that Andrew wasn't in the cellar or his bedroom, they still didn't panic, assuming maybe he was at a friend's and had simply lost track of time. The Gosden family began to panic when they phoned round the parents of Andrew's friends and they revealed that he hadn't attended school that day. It was then, at 7 p.m, when the family phoned the police and reported Andrew as a missing person. When he disappeared, Andrew was described as standing at 5'3" tall, of slim build, with light brown hair and brown eyes. After the family had spoken with police, they anxiously searched the area surrounding their home and the route Andrew took to school, praying they would find something, anything, that indicates where Andrew may be now. No one could identify any reason why Andrew would run away, and his family were baffled by his uncharacteristic disappearance, as it was completely out of his nature. Within 3 hours of him being reported missing, missing person posters were already circulating around their small town, and friends and family had joined the search to locate Andrew and bring him home to his loving family. The trail went cold very quickly, an outcome that would have been extremely disappointing for the Gosden family. How could their hilarious, genius boy just vanish into thin air without a trace? It was theorised that Andrew potentially went to London to go sightseeing, as the family frequently travelled to the capital to visit Andrew's aunts, uncles, grandparents and family friends. Kevin also reported that Andrew loved visiting museums and exhibitions around London and had an intense knowledge of public transport around the city, meaning he was confident navigating his way around. However, if this were the case, and Andrew did go to London to take in the sights, that theory fails to explain where he is now, 13 years later. There have been hundreds of sightings of Andrew since he disappeared, but unfortunately, none of them have proved credible. Within the first year, there had been 122 reported sightings of Andrew around London and in the area of Brighton, a few of which Kevin and Glenys believe could have been credible sightings. One sighting placed Andrew in a Pizza Hut on Oxford Street the day he went missing, which is about an hour walk from King's Cross Station. As we already know, Andrew loved pizza, and upon hearing of the report, Kevin suggested it could be a credible sighting due to the manner in which the witness described Andrew as talking to them. Furthermore, there were unconfirmed sightings of Andrew later that day in Covent Garden, a further report of a sighting on Oxford Street on the 17th of September, and a report of someone matching Andrew's description sleeping in a park the following day. There have been further sightings in Streatham in London, South Wales, Birkenhead in Merseyside, and as far south as Plymouth, but none of these reports have ever been verified. Heartbreakingly, the investigation hasn't really progressed massively over the last 13 years. In September 2009, Andrew's family released an age-progressed image of what they believed he may have looked like 2 years following the disappearance. In May 2011, the family paid for a private company to search the River Thames using specialist equipment, and whilst this did uncover a body, ultimately it wasn't Andrew. A bittersweet finding, I'm sure. In 2016, Kevin and Glenys appealed for any information that would lead to locating Andrew on an episode of Panorama, and in 2017, the charity Missing People made Andrew the face of their Find Every Child campaign to mark 10 years since his disappearance. The police launched a fresh appeal in September 2017 and began searching for any evidence that would suggest Andrea was still alive. They searched records from opticians in hope they would find a request for a prescription similar to the one Andrea required. They checked requests for documents such as passports or national insurance, and they circulated his DNA, fingerprints, and medical and dental records. Yearly, police check John Doe's in hospitals to rule out the possibility of them being Andrew. So far, all efforts to locate Andrew Gosden have proved futile, as the police and his family are no closer to knowing the truth than they were the day he went missing. So, if someone walks past you in the street, or you serve someone in a shop, and you believe they may be Andrew Gosden, how can you be certain? There are several factors that should make it relatively simple in establishing whether the person in front of you, next to you on the train, or behind you in a queue is Andrew Gosden or not. Andrew's right ear is unusually shaped, a characteristic that's as unique as a fingerprint. Andrew was deaf in his right ear, but due to perfect hearing in his left ear, this detail may go unnoticed during a conversation. The deafness does make it difficult for Andrew to locate where a sound may be coming from. If you shout his name and he turns the wrong way, or turns in a full circle to identify the location of the sound, you may well be looking at Andrew Gosden. Andrew is highly intelligent, and if you talk to him, you will probably notice he talks very fast but quiet. If you have a prolonged conversation with Andrew, you will pick up on his wit and comedy quotes. If you're unsure as to whether the person you are talking to is Andrew Gosden, ask him to perform a complicated mathematical equation and he will be able to perform it in his head. Andrew may have an incomplete backstory about his life and may not have access to a bank, passport, or possess a national insurance number. I will put up the age progression images on my website to give you an indication as to what Andrew may look like now. However, it's impossible for it to be 100% accurate, as we have no idea how Andrew's style may have changed over the years. If you believe you may have seen Andrew Gosden, please phone South Yorkshire Police on 0114 220 2020. Or contact the Missing People charity on 116 000 and do not post the information online to ensure no confidentiality is breached and the police can investigate the lead without external involvement. The Missing People charity works tirelessly to reunite missing children and adults with their families. At the beginning of this episode, I vaguely discussed the main reasons why a child may run away from home. I'd like to go into these in more detail, namely how to notice the signs your child may be struggling and what steps you can take to help them. If your child appears to have a consistently low mood and lack of motivation, if they now don't enjoy things the way they used to, have become withdrawn and spend less time with friends and family, are regularly tearful or upset, or their sleeping or eating habits change, they may be exhibiting signs of depression. However, these signs, as well as appearing to feel nervous or on edge and potentially suffering with panic attacks, can also be a sign of anxiety. Identifying mental illness and understanding the fine line between mental illness and normal teenage behaviour is an arduous task. If you suspect your child may be exhibiting signs of poor mental health, the first thing you can do is try and talk to them. Reassure them that you love and care for them and that they're not alone. And most importantly, remain calm and patient and ensure you're approachable. Reassure them that their feelings are valid and provide a safe space where your child feels they can be entirely honest with you. If your child feels like they can't talk to you in person, maybe try texting them or getting them to write you a letter describing how they're feeling. Encourage your child to talk with their GP, someone at school, or even contact Childline on 0800 1111 if they're struggling to talk to you. If you would like more advice, you can discuss any queries or concerns with a trained counsellor on 0808 800 5000. If you are a child listening to this and you feel you are struggling with your mental health, there's a few things you can do. Each day, try and do at least one of these things. Be kind to yourself and think about what you would say to your friend if they came to you with the same worries. Think about whether you're thirsty, hungry, or tired. Have a drink, have a snack, or have a nap to rectify these needs. Focus on the here and now. If you feel yourself spiraling, take yourself away from the situation and give yourself time to calm down. If you're feeling a panic attack coming on, you can use the 5-4-3-2-1 method. 5 things you can see, 4 things you can feel, 3 things you can hear, 2 things you can smell, and 1 thing you can taste to help ground you. You must also take a break every now and again. Take some deep breaths when you feel like you're losing control, and remember to be kind to other people. Building a healthy routine is vital to healthy mental health, and you could achieve this by setting a reminder or alarm on your phone to remind you to take frequent breaks so you don't get overwhelmed. Set an alarm every morning so you wake up at the same time, and give yourself an extra 10 minutes so you don't feel too stressed. Ask yourself how you're feeling that morning. Have a glass of water, a shower, and then breakfast. When you're feeling down or just having a bad day, take 30 minutes to do something you enjoy. You could also keep a diary of all the lovely things people say to you, for you to go back and read when you're feeling down in the dumps. Importantly, make sure you have supportive friends and family around you who you can confide in about your issues. Talking is a really important step to help ease the burden of mental illness. If you don't feel like you can talk to your family or friends, please contact Childline. They're there to offer a listening ear. Bullying can happen anywhere, at home, at school, or online, and is described as behaviour such as name-calling, hitting, spitting, pushing, and spreading rumours that will hurt another person. There are so many types of bullying that range from physical, verbal, and emotional. It's extremely difficult to identify that a child is being bullied. However, there are certain signs you can look out for. Your child's belongings suddenly becoming lost or broken. Unexplained physical injuries such as bruises or scratches. Your child suddenly being afraid to go to school or frequently feigning sickness to get out of going. Becoming nervous, distressed or withdrawn, and new problems with eating or sleeping. It's entirely possible that any of these symptoms may represent another issue at play, but it's definitely worth questioning whether your child is being bullied. If you suspect your child may be being bullied, have a discussion with them about what bullying is and gently ask them if they're experiencing anything like that. Remain calm and listen to what they tell you. If they feel they can't talk to you, suggest they talk to someone at school, another family member, or again, they can contact Childline. If your child develops low self-esteem as a result of bullying, encourage them to participate in activities they enjoy or that make them feel good. Take them out shopping, or partaking in their favourite sport, or just going for a walk in the countryside. For more information, you can visit the NSPCC's website. If you are experiencing bullying, there are a few steps you can take in an attempt to overcome it. If you're being bullied online, the first step you can take is to report the profile of the bully to the social media host and then block them. Keep a diary of what happened, when, and take screenshots of any messages you get sent that you can use as proof if needs be. If you're being bullied by someone at school, it's important you find someone you trust and tell them, maybe your favourite teacher or teaching assistant. If the bullying becomes physical or violent in nature, if you're sexually assaulted, your belongings are stolen, you are bullied as a direct result of your race, sexuality, gender or disability, or if someone is threatening to share explicit photos of you online, these are crimes and you can report them to the police. Remember, you're not alone, and there are people around you who love and care for you, and if you can, find a way to talk to one of those people. If you feel you can't talk to your family or friends, you can contact Childline, the details of which I will put in my show notes. Child sexual exploitation is a form of sexual abuse whereby a child is given gifts, such as money, in exchange for performing sexual favours. Children may feel like they are in a loving relationship with the individual, an act known as grooming. Children can be trafficked into or within the UK to be sexually exploited, where they'll be forced to take part in sexual activities, usually with multiple people. Abusers may use physical abuse, intimidation, or even financial abuse to coerce the child into performing these sexual acts. If a child is being sexually exploited online, they may be forced to send explicit pictures of themselves or partake in sexual conversations. This can then escalate once the abuser has possession of these photos or conversations, as they may then use them to blackmail the child into performing further sexual activity. Gangs can use sexual exploitation as an exertion of control. If your child begins exhibiting unhealthy or inappropriate sexual behaviour, becomes frightened of people or places, begins being secretive, or their mood or character changes, if they have unexplained physical injuries, STIs, or become pregnant, it may be worth considering if they are being sexually exploited. Other signs may include skipping school, having an older boyfriend or girlfriend, having a new group of friends, or staying out later. If a child divulges to you that they believe they are being sexually exploited, listen to them. Reassure them you believe them and love them. Tell them they've done the right thing by telling you, and that none of this is their fault. Don't confront the alleged abuser, and report the abuse as soon as you can. If your child is in immediate danger, please ring 999. There are several ways you can report abuse. 101 is the non-emergency police number in the UK. You can contact Crime Stoppers anonymously by completing an online form, which I will link to in my show notes and website, or by phone on 0800 555 111. You can also contact the NSPCC on 0808 800 5000 by email at help@nspcc.org.uk or by filling out one of their online forms, which again I will link to in my show notes and on my website. If you were being sexually abused, first of all, I am so sorry. Please be aware that you are not alone and that absolutely none of this is your fault. If you feel you may be exhibiting any of these characteristics I've mentioned and believe you're being sexually exploited or you've been sexually abused in any way, you must report it. Sexual abuse can include being touched without your consent, someone flashing you or being forced to have sex or perform sexual acts. You must consent to every sexual act. If you do not consent, this is abuse. If you consented at the start, but you changed your mind and they carried on, it's abuse. If they kept pushing and pushing until you gave in and consented, it's abuse. If you feel you've experienced any of these scenarios, or you've been sexually abused in any other way, please talk to someone you trust. You could sit down and talk to your family, you could write them a letter, or you could ask a trusted friend to be there with you for support when you tell someone. You're not alone. It's not your fault. Please talk to someone. If you are considering running away, please know you are loved and you are wanted. Have a look at the Missing People website and the Runaway Helpline website. They have lots of useful information that may be useful to you. Reach out to someone who can help. Contact the helpline if you don't have anyone you can trust. The Runaway Helpline is a confidential service where you'll be connected to someone who can listen and try and give you some advice. Ultimately, the outcome of the call is completely up to you. The person on the other end will try and make sure your wishes are upheld in the safest manner possible. Andrew, if you are listening to this, your parents, family and friends, they miss you so much. They love you unconditionally. And if you don't wish to return home, they just want to know that you are safe. Your parents love you no matter what, Andrew. You're not in any trouble whatsoever. And if you can, please contact someone and let them know you're safe. Missing People, who your family have worked extremely closely with over the years, have a runaway helpline which you can ring or text on 116 000. The helpline is there to support you. The conversation is entirely led by you, and you do not have to disclose any information you don't wish to share. The helpline is completely confidential, and they only know the information that you wish to disclose. And that message is to anyone who's run away from home. No one is here to judge you or force you to reveal any information or do anything that you don't wish to do. All they are there to do is help you, listen to you, and give you advice if you need it. All your families wish to know is that you are safe. Andrew, if you are listening to this, your parents have a website dedicated to locating you, and I'd like to finish this episode with a message to you from them. Dear Andrew, we have all missed you so much since the day you left. Not a day goes by that you are not in our minds constantly. You were always so witty, polite, caring, and intelligent that we desperately miss your company. The same is true of all your friends and the thousands of people who have prayed for you and helped us search for you. If you should ever read this, forget about any water under the bridge and please have no fear about making contact with us. We do not care where you have been or what lifestyle you choose for yourself. We only want to know that you are safe and well and to help and support you if we can. We remain as proud of you as we always have been and love you deeply. All our love, Dad, Mum and Charlie. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review, and Patreon to consider becoming a patron of Murder & More. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder & More, Instagram at Murder & More Pod, and Facebook at Murder & More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week for another episode.
Hi, my name's Alexis, and I'm the host of The Great Unsolved. Each week on Wednesday at 3:30 a.m., I post an episode about an unsolved case having to do with a disappearance or murder that interests me and has been in my thoughts lately. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Great Unsolved, on Instagram at The Great Unsolved, on our YouTube named The Great Unsolved, and find our podcast anywhere you normally listen to podcasts.